Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. It is a Sunday night. The Lakers just had their worst loss of the season, and I am reading your guys' iTunes reviews. I want to really quickly talk about or react to the game. I don't usually do this. I don't usually react to a single game on Sunday nights where I have a bunch of iTunes review questions to answer, and some of this will be reiterated by some of the questions that get asked, but this is an interesting spot. The Lakers right now are now 3-7 without LeBron James. They just lost to the team that LeBron probably would enjoy beating the most, or likes losing to the least, in the Cleveland Cavaliers. Luke Walton is, as we've talked about several times here on the show, he is not Magic Johnson's guy. He is not LeBron's guy. He is not Rob Pelinka's guy. He is Jeannie Buss's guy, but that's it. And games like this and continuing to coach a team that comes out as slowly as this team did in both halves, it's like I said to Pete, Magic Johnson is looking for any excuse he can possibly have to fire the guy, to bring in his own guy. It's nothing against Luke, I don't think, per se, but I do think it's something that they would prefer to have happen. They just prefer the guys that they would be able to bring in. Now, somebody will ask this question, and somebody asked it on Twitter, you know, what that guy might look like and who the best candidates would be. We know that they aren't going to look at the best candidates. We know this. Like, they aren't going to think outside the box here. It's going to be somebody that Magic Johnson likes personally. It'll be Mark Jackson. It'll be Jason Kidd. And whether or not they actually help the team remains to be seen. I would probably say that those guys are worse coaches than Luke. But if they're willing to hire a shooting coach, then that also puts the Lakers in a better situation than they're currently in right now, right? So who knows? But this is the kind of loss that sends that has a ripple effect throughout the entire organization. Magic Johnson said that he wasn't going to fire Luke this season unless something drastic happens, right? Well, losing to the worst team in the NBA, snapping their 12-game losing streak, and doing so while the team looks pretty lackluster throughout the game until the last couple minutes of the game. That's the something drastic that Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka could conceivably have been looking for, right? Not that they wanted that kind of thing to happen. I'm not saying that, but it's something that if you're looking for a reason to fire somebody, there are worse reasons. And these types of losses, they have huge organizational impact on a franchise like the Lakers that are desperate to win again, that are desperate to be legitimate again. And whether that comes in the form of Luke Walton or if it comes in the form of a trade, that remains to be seen. But the next few days are going to be really fascinating. You have a bunch of people who are very well connected in the media. You have all kinds of people who have their various platforms. You know, LeBron literally has his own platform that he can release information through. He has ESPN would happily leak anything that he says to Dave McMenamin or Brian Windhorst. Jeannie Buss has her ways to leak information by way of Ramona Shelburne or whomever. Magic Johnson has all of his. He worked at ESPN, so he has a lot of the same connections as well. Rob Pelinka, being an agent, spun all kinds of stuff for his clients before, and I'm sure he's going to be looking to do the same thing again here in this situation. So just wait. Over the next few days, I'd be shocked if we didn't get any kind of leak, either in support of or detracting from belief in Luke Walton, belief in the roster, belief in the situation, whatever that might look like. You're going to get leaks like that, and they're going to be really telling of the various angles that people who are working in the organization are going to be trying to manipulate. Like, here's the thing. Am I pissed off that the Lakers lost to Cleveland? Absolutely. But to blame Luke Walton only, that's wrong. To blame the players only, that's wrong. This stuff starts at the top. This is a flawed roster. Lance Stephenson isn't helping in this situation. Rajon Rondo has missed half the year already. Like, look at the signings outside LeBron James. They've either missed significant time or they've been bad. And JaVale McGee has been up and down. He was great to start the year. Then he got sick, and it looked like he was catching his wind again. But, you know, last night's game was a step back, right? Rajon Rondo, like I said, has missed half the year. Michael Beasley, and look, I'm not holding his situation against him. I completely understand where he was coming from and why he stepped away. But he still missed time. Lance Stephenson has been mostly bad. You know, there's a review here asking why I still hold his domestic violence against him. One, because it's domestic violence. Two, it's not even just that. It's that he's not a good basketball player. He doesn't fit with what the Lakers are looking to do. And so, you know, like Magic Johnson's pick was Mo Wagner. He overrode the scouting department that the Lakers have and drafted Wagner and was very proud to draft Wagner. Wagner can't get minutes, and the Lakers are missing half their guys. This is a flawed roster. This was a bad job from the get-go. They were bailed out because they found Tyson Chandler on the scrap heap. And even he has been, I mean, he played, what, a minute? He's nursing a bad back, right? And so, you know, Luke Walton deserves blame for any number of things. His offense is rudimentary. His stance on developing players is too hands off. Like the situation right now, and this is like I said with Pete the other day. The Lakers there was plenty of reason for optimism, but that could always change, right? They could take a step back and fall back into the bad habits, and they have. And we'll see what it takes to break themselves out of it. That game, Tuesday night's game against Chicago, now becomes an absolute must win. Look at the schedule beyond this Cavs, Chicago, and I believe they have one more winnable game. After that, man, the schedule gets really freaking tough, and we don't know how long LeBron James is going to be out. So that's the first segment here. I'm going to return to the typical mailbag style of show for this one. So hang tight. I'll come back and we'll talk this out. All right. The first question here is a funny one. It made me laugh. Scott R. 11183 asks, are you drunk on some shows? I feel like you might be. Example, the January 6th show. Well, the January 6th show, I can specifically say I was not. There was a show a while back, and fortunately people around me and myself, I kind of realized, all right, I can't do that. That was embarrassing. So I don't do that. I will say I have a glass of wine next to me right now. The Lakers just lost to the worst team in the NBA. And I have to talk about it for 20 to 30 minutes. So doing that sober would probably suck. And then the other thing, too, is I get canker sores on my tongue, and it makes it kind of difficult to talk. So that's where, if you think I might be slurring my words or whatever, that's a lot of, I have one right now. I have one right on the tip of my tongue. I eat sunflower seeds a lot, and I should probably not do that. All right, next question. Anthony, please give me a reason to not start to get angry at Magic Johnson. He's one of my favorite players in history. I listen to you every day. You are right about the Lakers and missing things they should have as the largest brand in basketball. Has Magic/Pelinka/Luke regime done anything good organizationally besides LeBron? Well, besides LeBron is quite the disclaimer, right? Now, whether or not you think LeBron came for his business ventures or whatever, that's besides the point. They did acquire LeBron James. Have they done anything right organizationally? It's impossible to say right now. It's really early in the process. But I just think it looks really bad that the Lakers have an ambiguous analytics department that they aren't willing to brag about. And they don't have a shooting coach. Like, it's beyond me. They're the worst shooting team in the NBA. The worst shooting team. And they don't employ a shooting coach. That's just, it's remarkable to me. And now you can say guys prefer to have their own guys and whatever, or, it would be, I guess, micromanage. There'd be some micromanaging that players may not like or whatever, but just employ one. And if a player wants to get an extra little bit of help, they can approach that coach, right? And they can work with that coach. The fact that the Lakers don't have that right now, and they don't have a tactician as an offensive assistant, like, that, it's not great, man. That's not a great look. And we'll see if things turn around. And look, if whatever coach Magic, I said this a second ago, but if Luke does get let go, and the next coach is a little bit more hands-on in terms of the development of some of these players, I think it'd be a good thing. I like Luke Walton a lot, but this strategy of just let players go off and handle their own business and hope that they do the right things, that isn't working. Change it, right? If it's broke, you fix it. And the Lakers right now, their idea of fixing things is, well, we'll just keep banging our head up against the wall. And that's just, it's not a great look. All right, next question here comes from Wood Shack Zach. You have mentioned that the Lakers don't have the best staff. Do you think adding Steve Nash to Walton's staff would be a good addition? He did play for the Lakers after all. I think he outranks a lot of what, like, he would, if he signed on to be with the Lakers staff, it would be considered a demotion. He's like a general manager of Canada basketball. He does work with the Golden State Warriors and is very well liked over there. I don't think he's really an option. And the other thing too is that, like, here's the sad thing about players. If they don't go out and have coaching experience elsewhere, there are systemic issues in their knowledge of the game. You have to be very unique as a player to be able to go out and recognize the right systems fit for which team, know all of the various systems, and be able to research them during your playing career. Everybody likes to think of point guards as like the best candidate to be head coaches, and I think they are for the most part, positionally speaking, but they have to go out and distance themselves from their playing career so as to learn the game a little bit better on a coaching level. It's a different way of looking at the game. It really is. And just plucking a player with no coaching experience and throwing him there into that type of situation, it's a recipe for disaster. I mean, Jason Kidd was hated by his players, and it's just because you think about the game differently. And for Jason Kidd being an all-time great point guard, like, he was talented. It's why Kobe will never be a good coach. You get guys who are too talented to be coaches, and they only think about the game from the perspective of how they played, given their natural talents, and it makes it hard to relate to your average NBA player. Magic Johnson's another example of that same kind of thing. All right, let's answer one more question here. This is from Tosca Bella. You have made way too many hints. Let the world know about the Lakers point guard in 2038. We're going to get some information on that situation tomorrow, or today by the time you guys are listening to this, so hang tight. I'm going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to rapid fire through the remaining questions that we have here. We still have quite a few, so hang tight. All right, next question here comes from, Captain Matt 8. Hey, Anthony, great work on the show. Thanks. Do you think Phil Jackson will get a statue at Staples Center? And if so, when would the Lakers do that? Ooh, that's a good question. He won 5 titles for the Lakers. So on that, I guess, resume alone, you would say he would seemingly deserve something. If it isn't a statue, some kind of recognition in Staples Center. So, like, maybe a jersey. Like, Chick Hearn has a jersey with a microphone on it. Maybe it would be, like, Phil Jackson with his Roman numeral 13 or a Roman numeral 5 or something like that. That would be interesting. The problem, though, is that it's kind of awkward with his relationship with the Lakers and his relationship with Jeannie Buss and his exits from the Lakers. Neither of them were particularly smooth. So we'll see. I don't know if he deserves a statue or if he ever gets a statue. If he got a statue, I just want him perched on his super high chair, you know, maybe with his pinkies in his mouth whistling the way that he used to, or holding a triangle or something like that. But it would look kind of Illuminati-ish. But either way, it's a great question. That's a really fascinating. I'd be interested to see to see what you guys think about that, whether or not Phil Jackson deserves a statue. Next question here comes from Maze8326. Been listening since 2017. Thanks. Been hearing a lot about an AD trade, which I can't see happening. With that being said, do you think the Lakers still have a chance at signing Kawhi in the offseason, even though we haven't heard much? Also trying to promote my website, theartfulfox.com. I'll email, Maze asks about pricing for ads. Shoot an email to lakerslockedon@gmail.com and I'll put you in touch with our sales staff and we'll try to work something out. But in terms of the AD trade, I too am skeptical. I mean, like, the Lakers' strategy right now is, or the pieces that they would be hoping to trade for Anthony Davis are, their values are in the basement right now, right? So that makes it difficult on top of everything else that we've talked about on previous shows. In terms of Kawhi, I think it's a good thing that we haven't heard anything really on that front. If we heard all kinds of stuff about how he was dead set on being a Clipper, or if he was dead set on staying in Toronto and making it work out there, then obviously you'd feel a little bit more nervous. But we haven't really heard anything, and he's obviously reclusive as it is. So that makes it even more complicated in trying to read between the lines when there are no lines. But Chris Carter seems to, who shares an agent with Kawhi Leonard and is apparently pretty close with Leonard and his camp, said that he thinks that there's still a chance that the Lakers are still on the table there. So who knows? I'm not going to say it's impossible. How about that? In terms of percentage of possibility, 20%. That'd be my guess. From Assess the Threat, how much do I need to donate for you to get Kuzmania tattooed on your chest? Yes, I am writing this between the third and fourth of the Pistons games. Cheers, ATT. So, what would it take? I think I would probably do it for $100,000. Get Kuzmania tattooed on my chest. I don't have any tattoos, is a thing. My mom is, like, religiously against tattoos, and as I said a couple shows ago, I am a total mama's boy. There is a tattoo that I want to get, but you know, I don't really want to ruffle those feathers there. And if I was to break that rule with Kuzmania, and it's like front and center on my chest, I'd probably be disowned and probably divorced. My wife probably wouldn't like that very much either. So it would take $100,000 at least. Next question here comes from Diamond99. Hi, Anthony. Big fan. First of all, thanks. What if we go for Kristaps and free agent and trade our best? And what's the best trade offer for Dame Dalla? Thanks for your feedback. And shout out from 626. I don't think the Knicks are going to let Kristaps walk for nothing. So I don't really think there's an amount that you can offer him that the Knicks aren't also willing to offer. In terms of Dame Lillard, it's the same concerns that I have with Anthony Davis, is that the pieces that the Lakers would be trading for Damian Lillard right now, their values are in the basement. And so I don't think there's a trade that the Lakers could pull off. Now, we'll see if Portland's season falls off a cliff and they decide it's finally time to make some organizational changes and some culture changes and some real personnel changes to redress some of their issues. But But as of right now, I don't see a trade that the Lakers could offer that any Laker fan would be comfortable with. That's how I'd put it. So would you be okay with offering KCP and then the entire young core, Lonzo, Ingram, Kuzma, and Hart, and maybe a first on top of that? Would you be okay with that? I don't think I would. And it gets really complicated in terms of like players and waiving players and all of that too. So yeah, trades for big stars right now. And this is kind of one of my concerns with and one of the things that Pete and I talk about quite often is yes, the Lakers could swing for the fences and make some trade for Anthony Davis, and a lot of the issues will be fixed, right? But at some point, the Lakers need to be able to improve on the margins so that it doesn't take such a drastic move to address issues within the roster or within the organization. And this is where I would like for the Lakers to find some smaller trade that addresses some of their needs. And there are trades to be made out there. If you ask me in the form of a five-star review, I could go through them. All right, next question is from Tommy Reinville. We just saw Hakuzma Matata at its finest with a career high in three quarters. Very nice. My question this time, if Slenderman has found a better niche for himself in scoring in the paint, does a recipe for success become LeBron adjusting his game to fit Slender more than vice versa? Or is it assumed every player on the team must adjust to fit LeBron's game regardless? It's not so much just adjusting to LeBron James' game. It's adjusting to what's best for the team, right? And generally speaking, maximizing LeBron James' talents is the best thing for the team. And, you know, whereas if you try to maximize Brandon Ingram's talents and that takes away any way, shape, or form from what LeBron James is able to give you, that's probably going to hurt the ceiling of the team. And you know, I'm just not willing to do that for Ingram. That being said, does Ingram getting to the rim more often make a ton of sense? Absolutely. That's why we've been calling for him to get cut, you know, have sets that feature him cutting to the basket more often, catching the ball with any kind of forward momentum, attacking closeouts when a defense is rotating over to him. Like, those things make Ingram a better player, and you can do that with LeBron James. Next question here comes from Vante35. Is engaged Lonzo the best player from his draft class? I don't know. I talked about this with Sam Amick on the Locked On NBA show from this past Friday. I don't like the way we talk about rookie classes and stuff like that right now. It just doesn't make any sense to compare guys in year one or year two of their seasons. Can you analyze a player's game and try to predict where that player might go? Absolutely. That's a lot of fun. But if you're doing it and it directly affects the way that you view another player in that guy's draft class, like, I just feel like that's counterintuitive. It's counterproductive, really, for the intelligence of the conversation as that pertains to those players. So is Lonzo the best player? I don't think so. But it's not because of anything specific. It's more that I just don't think that draft class has a best player right now. It's already changed twice. Next question here comes from but I do want to say, though, regarding Lonzo Ball, the Lakers cannot afford even minutes of Lonzo floating. If he's on the floor, he has to be fully engaged for the entirety of the time that he is out there. If he floats, the Lakers become the worst team in the NBA with LeBron James out. And we saw that. We saw that against the Cavs, where Lonzo, in stretches where he was engaged and impactful, the Lakers crawled back into games, into the game against Cleveland. When he started floating, the Lakers tended to kind of lose steam and lose footing and traction to the worst team in the NBA this season. Next question here comes from Laker for Life. Go Lake Show, go. Hey, Anthony, fan of the show, but I don't get why some people are so hard on Ingram but give Lonzo a pass. It depends on, so in general, and it goes on and on and on about Lonzo and Ingram and the analysis on both guys. I can't address the amount of content that you take in, right? I know I'm very hard on Ingram. I know I can also be very hard on Lonzo. I can only speak for what I say because I don't know what other content you're taking in. Are you talking about NBA Twitter in general or Lakers Twitter in general? Well, I don't know who you follow. Are you talking about the blogosphere? Well, I don't know who you read. If you're talking about traditional media, again, I don't know who you read or listen to. So in terms, like when you guys ask me, why aren't people harder or easier or softer or whatever on Player X? Well, I don't know what that's compared to, you know? Next question here comes from G to the A. We have two more to go here. Hey, Anthony, I like the show. You, Pete, and Harrison have a good chemistry and analysis. Thanks, man. Keep it up. My question, the Lakers' young core seem to have trouble with consistently putting it mildly. I always find myself defending them from the Twitter trolls. My actual question is, out of the Lakers' young core, who do you think is the hardest to defend from Twitter and public slander? Hope you see this. I think it's not that one player is harder to defend than others. I mean, if I was just answering that question, it's probably Ingram, just because like the path for him to become an impactful NBA player is there. He just seems to ignore that path, or the Lakers coaching staff seems to ignore that path. I don't know what combination of those two things is going on there. In terms of the larger general point here is that because of the inconsistency, the Lakers' young core is really hard to defend in general because I don't know which games people are watching. If they only seem to tune in or I only seem to see people chime in whenever the Lakers seem to struggle, right? And for those kinds of people, you're never going to be able to quote unquote defend the Lakers young core from people who don't want to see them succeed, right? Like if I was a Cavs fan, I would love crapping on the Lakers young core. I would prefer it if the choice that LeBron James made put him in a worse situation than he was in Cleveland, right? That's just part of being a fan. But that said, I'm not going to be able to be realistic with very many of those people, or the conversation with those kinds of people isn't going to be particularly productive because we're coming from the conversation from two very different places. Last question. What was the reason for Bees not playing at all pretty much in the first part of the season when he was with the team? You think it was solely because of personnel issues, or was Luke still trying to figure out rotations? I think it's a little bit of both. I think part of it is the Lakers considered themselves okay at Beasley's position. I think they saw him as a center and only a center. And if he was a power forward, well, that's where Kyle Kuzma has been playing his best basketball for the most part, or LeBron James plays his best basketball. So you're looking at a minutes crunch there. I don't think it ever really dawned on the Lakers to just give him Lance Stephenson's minutes. And we even saw it in last night's game as well. I mean, Beasley, I think, still played his minutes total was in the single digits. And given the impact that he can have and the way that he fits with the roster, that's just wrong. And that's why I get really frustrated with some of the conversation after losses is you have people who are adamant that Luke deserves zero blame for what's going on. Oh, he didn't miss those free throws and he didn't miss those wide open three pointers. Sure, that's fine. But he also doesn't employ a shooting coach, which falls back on him. And in terms of the personnel that he was using in the game, Beasley playing as little as he did, that's not great for Luke. That's not a great look for Luke. And we'll see what adjustment he makes to the starting lineup. If he swaps out KCP for Josh Hart, who was shooting something like 19% from 3-point range since LeBron got hurt, then we'll see that we'll see the adjustments there. But you know, as it pertains to just that game specifically, I think people who wanted to see Lance or Beasley play a little bit more in that game are right. They're 100% correct. And for those who were wondering, like, what took so long for him to start getting minutes, well, you kind of see it when they're reluctant to use him even while he's playing well, right? So it's frustrating, but that's where we are. Last question, or no more questions here. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I will try to find a guest for tomorrow's show. If not, then I'll find a way to make it fun. And tonight's show is a little bit more down than the last couple shows. And it's because the Lakers are once again on a two-game losing streak. They're coming off of a really frustrating loss to the worst team in the NBA. And those same questions that we've had all along are popping up once again. So we'll see if things turn around here in a bit. But for now, have a great rest of your day and make somebody else.